So, you've heard the heartbreaking stories of business owners who lost it all, whispering the phrase, "I wish I knew," as they watched their hard work crumble. And you've asked yourself, "Can I be the one walking blindly toward a cliff I can't even see?" Welcome to the Tax Answers Advisor. I am your host, Marcelino Dodge, enrolled agent and certified tax representation consultant. In this show, we dig deep into the financial realities that keep business owners up at night. We aren't just here to talk about forms and filings. We're here to talk about your survival, your legacy, and how to protect the empire you are building from threats you might not even know exist. Today, we're tackling those blind spots head on. I'm joined by Valerie Cobb, a business architect who is on a mission to end that painful "I wish I knew" syndrome. Valerie is an expert in execution that builds businesses buyers actually want, and she is currently leading the charge in cyber risk with a focus on stopping the fraudulent misuse of digital badging. That's what we're going to do, is connect the dots between solid business architecture, cyber safety, and the tax planning strategies that keep you out of trouble. Whether you are running a micro business or looking to exit with millions in cash flow, you cannot afford to operate in the dark. Before we begin, let's be honest about the biggest fear many of you face. That phrase, "I wish I knew," is heartbreaking, but there is a specific kind of pain that comes from staring at a stack of unfiled tax returns or an IRS notice threatening to seize your bank account. If you are paralyzed by the fear of payroll tax debts, audits, or liens, please hear me. You do not have to fight the government alone. I specialize in ending that nightmare and standing between you and the IRS. Don't wait until it's too late to save your business. Go to taxreliefcall.com and schedule your appointment now. Valerie, it is so nice to have you on today. How are you doing?
Doing good, Marcelino. It's great to be on your show again. And honestly, we've known each other for several years, so it's great to see you again. It's always nice to
see you for today. Yeah, it definitely is there. So can you go ahead and share a little bit about yourself and your background for our listeners?
Yeah, it was funny. Sometimes I get mixed up with a CFO. My most recent review was, she's a CFO, and it was from a bookkeeper. She was having me help her grow her business. And one of the things that she said is, "How do you find people like you?" And that was a hard thing to describe what we actually do. And so that "I wish I knew" is kind of like that mentor for helping businesses, not necessarily coach, because a lot of times people have a coach and it's like rah, 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 right? Yeah. It's tangibly, let's get your business plan set to either scale, sell, or pivot. And so in all of business building, I typically use the adage that if you couldn't get it past a shark tank, then you're not going to get it past your customers. But you should be asking your customers to get it past a shark tank. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of 22. Yeah. And if you can build it that way, then you can scale, you can pivot, you can exit. It's very important that way.
Yeah, definitely sounds like it there. So we'll just jump right into it here and talk initially about this "I wish I knew" syndrome, because it is for business owners. It's only business owners who have it. But you have experience working micro businesses. How often does that apply when it comes to their financial and tax compliance? And of course, what is the one thing they usually wish they knew earlier when the IRS comes knocking?
You and I have a shared history in tax and accounting from years ago. The challenge that you have is taxes, whether people like it or not, it's an expense. And nobody likes unplanned expenses eroding any of their take home. I don't care if you're a micro business, you're a Fortune 50. You need to monitor that, because that affects your cash flow. And the number one reason why businesses fail is primarily due to cash flow. We've talked about this before too. And if you have an unplanned expense and the IRS is knocking down your door, that is the one organization that will stop you dead in your tracks. So it needs to be, whether you're doing gap accounting, you still need to have tax accounting in the back of your mind on everything. And when I build out financial modeling to place the right people on the bus at the right stages, everything has a tax component to it. because that will affect cash flow.
The tax, yes, definitely will there, and certainly appreciate there, because I've obviously you've pivoted a little bit since we talked, and I've pivoted a little bit since we last talked there, because as I'm working more in the tax resolution field, solving tax problems, which fits in nicely with what you're discussing, because yes, the IRS comes knocking, and it could be more commonly related to business. It could be payroll taxes that they didn't pay because of, guess what? Cash flow.
Because of cash flow. And you've got to incorporate all of those, all of that in. Obviously, when we're doing modeling, you know, it starts when we're building a business or trying to turn a business around. They're very focused on, well, it's revenue generation. And I typically like to tell people that if you don't know where you want to go, it doesn't matter, right? That's Alice in Wonderland. I quote it all the time, but that's the Cheshire Cat. And when we think about the Cheshire Cat, that's sage for any business planning. When you're saying, I wish I knew that that tax credit, or I wish I knew that the IRS would get upset over this, that, and the other, it's not enough for, especially micro business, not to understand how that will affect them, because it can. Business failure rate is massive. And I don't care if you're a hairdresser all the way, like I said, to a fortune. If you're not planning how you're growing and how you're dealing with your take home, you're just kind of throwing a dart and hoping it hits bullseye.
Yeah.
And unless you're really good and have practiced it over and over again, you're probably not going to hit the bullseye.
Yeah. So, yes, we got to definitely watch that. I wish I knew, but that's just like just the start of it, because some people want to build a business, and as we talked about, they want to exit at some point, but yet they don't have the guidance. And it comes back to the, I wish I knew. And certainly even myself, I've looked at the fact that I'm got to build and I got to scale to be able to sell at some point, because I just don't want to close. I want to move it on to somebody and then make take what I made and earn and have a comfortable life afterwards. One point in this is things like a clean tax history, strategic tax planning when preparing for sale. So have you ever seen something happen where something falls through because their taxes weren't in good shape?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working with some finders right now for private equity and venture capital. And of course, I'm actually fundraising for Validera at the moment. And then I was talking just for a potential client in the holistic medicine, med spa kind of arena. And all of those things come into play, because one of the first things, especially if you're funding, doing debt financing, one of the first things they're going to ask you is, are your taxes up to date? Because we can't take on a tax debt. And you talked about succession planning just now, which is extremely important. And micro businesses, I call micro businesses under that 2 million, 1 million range, you know, kind of thing. A lot of times they are mom and pop organizations. They don't have a succession plan in their mind. It'll just somehow happen, and they haven't built their business to not be a headache, even if they're going to hand it over to their children. But if you're trying to get acquired, they're going to look at every angle of your financial forecast and your tax. You should have a tax position on that. I do every single month, I reforecast my tax position every single month, because I have to know that I can make that, because you've got, that's the one thing you got to pay.
Yeah. One thing you got to pay. Definitely there. Yes. Yeah. So that is important, which is like all the tax part. And I mentioned about payroll taxes, which is why I always recommend you just pay them with each payroll. That way it's boom, it's done. It, you don't have to worry about it, but that's, I will say, the sad consequence that sometimes doesn't get done, which is one of the biggest reasons people get into trouble, is because of not paying their payroll tax. And I was just on a seminar this morning where there's a case that one of my colleagues that was actually speaking at that was talking about, that's holding up a sale of a business because they didn't pay their payroll taxes on time. Or the other deal is company bought a business and didn't check that. And so now they're fighting with the IRS over the fact that, oh, you own this company. Oh, guess what? You also bought this payroll tax liability because they didn't look into it ahead of time. So,
and I think a lot of it is they do underestimate that. I can't say enough. Even when I'm helping people build their business model and throwing in the right seats, and sales team members are a lot of the topic. But at the end of the day, I tell people all the time, I'm not a CFO, I play one on TV. Go get your planning done. And the challenge that they have right now, Marcelino, and I was actually commenting on this for Anthony Nitsos. He's a fractional CFO, and is many of the CFOs that are out there for micro businesses are really, they are bookkeepers, maybe controllers, but they are not strategic. And if you're not looking strategically at your business to plan for payroll tax, to plan for, you know, it's like when I'm telling somebody, okay, you're going to hire this manager, what's their OTE? You have to include how much you're going to pay in benefits, payroll tax, everything in that whole planning. Because yeah, they do. They get into trouble. They think, well, I'll just hire somebody. And there is different ways to hire and for those payroll taxes. And sometimes you hire as a micro business, a subcontractor, but you have to make sure that they're actually managing appropriately. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is a huge problem. So many, again, want to throw a dart and hope it wins. And all of a sudden, the next thing they know, I remember one time I was helping a tax preparer and they were saying, the software's not working, the software's not working. And it was because this person only earned like $40,000 in a year, but they had gambling debt and they lost gambling debt.
Oh my.
And yeah, you just went, oh my. What's happening? Because that is taxable. That is at a different spot where you can deduct. And so, yeah, they do. They underestimate tax, and taxes, again, to me, a lot of people say, well, it's not an expense line item, but I treat it as an expense. If you don't forecast that expense, you're going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely got to work on that forecast and then be ready, because that way that will make your business sellable if all items like payroll tax, once again, the biggest issues that businesses usually have, all that's lined up and going and smooth and you're wanting to scale and sell, then you'll be able to do it. You'll be able to exit out because you've taken care of these things and everything. So we're right on target there with it. And these messy tax situations like that can definitely make a sale. You can have, I mean, it could be like a great sale, but if you're the one selling, you could just hold up the whole thing. But you got to think about it. The buyer coming in should do their due diligence and check the tax records. At least that's my feeling on, especially with the things I've gone over the last couple of years and really delving into the tax resolution field more to really reach in and help to solve these issues. But yeah, so if you're a buyer, do your due diligence, find out about the tax. If you're the seller, make sure everything's in perfect shape, because otherwise your whole sale could just die because of it. And certainly we don't want that.
Ew. I mean, you're doing tax resolution, but the tax planning side helps you sleep better at night. If you're paying attention to that, you don't have to deal with trying to catch tail at the end. In one advice, because some of the companies I work with are taking investment, and a lot of those startups. Now, the definition of a startup means it has not ever been in existence. You're not starting a business. So I can start a bookkeeping business. That's not a startup. Okay. But if you're taking investment for a true startup and just paying attention to whatever your exit plan is, and if that's 5 years with whatever multiplier, whatever that is, if you're taking that investment, you might qualify for some of these, like the qualified, oh, my brain just went QSBS for the first $10 to $20 million in that's not a micro business. But when you come down to all of a sudden selling for $20 million and it's tax free, if you set your business up properly, then you can take advantage. If there's only certain amounts of months that do that as a startup, and if you miss that window, I can't say it on, you know, you end up paying that huge tax on that exit. So somebody like yourself would go in and say, take a look at this and make sure that you're taking advantage of that as well.
Yeah, definitely there. On to our next topic here, which is something that you're going to have to explain a little bit to me because I'm not as familiar with it. Digital badging. What exactly is that? That's kind of a new term to me.
Oh, you're going to give me a moment to talk about my stuff. And I'm going off the screen because I'm crossing my leg. I love this startup. So I have a co-founder. She and I found a problem out there because I am a fractional CEO, CRO for organizations, right? Mm-hmm. And for the last year and a half, we got a patent pending. And that was actually by great advice from some private equity guys that had coached us a little bit about that because we were going to go to the market really hard. But so cyber risk, unless you're never online, you don't have to worry about cyber risk. So, and I recently, it's been 2 years now, I spoke at the Department of Defense and they have their new CMMC requirements for anybody who's selling into the government. And we were talking about how to help pay for those programs because over 3 years, you could probably pay $300,000 to $500,000 to get to that level. During that journey, my co-founder, Melanie Asher, she's worked with me at several other companies. And she said, some people had asked us, we need a badge. And we realized that there was a problem, especially with AI and fraud right now. But this started probably 2 years ago. This was right when CrowdStrike was having problems with Delta. And anyways, so what happened is we realized that badges, you could call it a logo, you could call it whatever it is, right? If you are able to work and appear before the IRS, they usually have logos or something that says that you're That is what a badge is. The problem is there was nothing that was solving for organization to organizational badging. And what happened with that is we realized that there were 200,000 associations running around there, Inc., Best Places to Work, all of those things, that really didn't have an Uber platform for managing the issuance from the issuer's point of view of these badges. There's Credly, there's all these other badging platforms out there, but they are to an individual. And as we started to look at the problem, like just with CMMC, there's over 100,000 I think it's 200,000 in the defense industrial base that has to reach this L2 requirement. And it costs them, like I said, around $300,000. The problem is they get a badge. That's marketing. Who cares about what the marketing looks like? But they'll even do a digital wallet, but it is only a snapshot in time, kind of like a financial statement, right? It's a snapshot in time. It doesn't mean you're still compliant. And the problem is there's no way to crawl the internet. Well, now there is a way to crawl the internet to see those who are taking advantage of other people by putting a badge up there that they don't have. One of the key situations was there was somebody who got an organizational badge, high trust, those types of things, or ISO. And the organizational badge, they put on their personal LinkedIn profile. The problem is you're not eligible as a human for that badge. Your organization is eligible. So if you leave that organization, the organization is also now not eligible because you were part of the building of that type of thing. Mm. So that's just one use case. But we found that in cyber risk, there's all sorts of governance risk compliance platforms running around out there. And that is showing evidence and proof you were compliant. But there's nothing controlling the evidence that's on people's websites. We talk to healthcare. Mm-hmm. They hate it when they use their logo or say that they're part of a program. Mm-hmm. Microsoft certified resellers. Are you really Microsoft? And mm-hmm. funny thing is Microsoft says that about 20% of their badges are not real. People that are capitalizing mm-hmm. over the competitor. So, it's a really interesting.
Okay.
It the trillion-dollar problem and
Wow.
AI happening right now. And all the fakes, you need some kind of Validera badge that actually is controlled by the issuer, not by the recipient. So they can pull it, change it, do whatever they want. If you say something like, use a brand like Elon Musk, I don't care if you like it or not. I was on YouTube. There's this organization that has 500,000 followers, and all they do is say that they're not supported by Elon Musk, but all they do is quotes by Elon Musk. They're monetizing off of these 500,000. So Elon Musk could go in and use a Validera system and badging system and anything that, and then the AI crawler to go grab and alert like attorneys and the DOJ and say, either pay me for my 500,000 off of my quotes, because he's now an organization, right?
Wow, Kenny. Okay, yeah. That's really interesting, because that fits in actually with a lot of the warnings that even the IRS has put out about imitations or emails that could seem like they're coming from the IRS. I mean, I get these emails from the IRS, updates from them on a regular basis. And one of them is these potentially fraudulent schemes of people essentially using their badge in a way that is trying to get people's money. So interesting there. That's another expansion upon just not just heard a lot of with the IRS, but obviously a lot of other businesses are having similar issues, which thus justifies this particular product. And congratulations on a patent pending there. That's exciting.
Non-provisional, so it's tied up internationally and nationally for 2 more years because that's slow that whole system goes. But yeah, so the IRS technically would have, if they wanted to use that systemized process, it would save them probably a lot of money to do it, but they cannot monetize it without going through patent for it.
Oh yeah, definitely there. So as we move on back on the tax and cash flow there, because as you help people and businesses generate millions in cash flow, once again, the struggle is you're growing fast, cash flow's coming in, tax liabilities are going up. How do you help clients or help people, businesses, with that aggressive growth in execution to make sure they're setting aside the funds, as they say, for Uncle Sam?
One is weekly stand-ups, right? And everybody who is working with those organizations, I don't care if you're a fractional CFO, you're a controller, whatever you are, they are in a weekly stand-up that talks about those issues. That's part of your operational aspect, right? So people, they're really good about saying, let's have a sales huddle, let's have a marketing huddle, let's have a this, that. You need to have a stand-up that talks about your financial statements, and there is no way that you cannot bring up tax problems if you are having those on a weekly, monthly, quarterly basis. So you have some short little sprints on the weekly, you have monthly that gets a little deeper dive and a review. And I have this financial modeling that I always set people up in so that it's very easy for them to see the actual where they stand at any moment. But it's basically built into the operational aspect of the whole thing. And it's really hard to hide it when deposits are missing. So, and I do that. I put that myself under that same thing. I have monthly. I have monthly set up with everything almost like a mock P&L all the way down to the tax, all the way down to, because we always have EBITDA and all of that. Like, okay, but then another line, then, you know, here's what you got left. So,
And this really, from what you're describing, sounds it goes beyond just like the normal bookkeeping and normal and regular like compliance, like an in-house accountant, or even if they're have an outside firm like us helping them with that kind of stuff. This takes it like to another level. That's kind of the understanding I'm getting from what you're stating there. Once getting the statements done in a timely manner, and then taking those statements and then seeing, okay, this is where we are, but here's basically the interpretation of them to help you to maximize even tax even more.
Definitely, because if you are not minding the farm the whole time, then you are going to have a left turn out of a right turn lane. I mean, things will happen, Marcelino. We know that. But the more that you stay on top of it, and I get people get so laxed with that, you know, oh, my accountant's handling that. Oh, well, you're a micro business. So not only are you going to wear a fair amount of salesman hat, but you better darn well know your financials. And if you don't understand them all the way, the IRS doesn't go, well, your bookkeepers did it. So but you're the owner. You're the CEO of your own company, right? And the buck stops on your shoulders.
So then blind spots, this is an interesting term. I hadn't thought about it before. Usually we think about it with driving, but when we think about it in the business sense, as you help micro businesses find operational blind spots, lead to financial distress, how does fixing that architecture then help prevent these from needing perhaps even what I do, the tax resolution services later?
Start with the end in mind. And I mentioned that. Now, you knew me very much as a CRO or a sales lead, market lead, that kind of person. But what you didn't know before that is I owned a construction company for 11 years. It got destroyed in the trade towers going down. And it was definitely a lot was lost from that. But I do things very entrepreneurially, even in larger organizations. And the reason why, and educating from the ground up, top down, sandwich everybody in between, is basically because what you don't know is your blind spots and the financial statements. I remember somebody talking about this at one time. I wish I could remember his name to give him credit for it, but he said, financial statements don't give you the answer, but they give you pause to ask a question. And very true. When we're setting up key performance indicators, all key performance indicators, whether people know it or not, the main dashboard is your financial statements. If you're for profit, I don't care what you are for other things. If you're for profit, and actually, I would say nonprofits as well, but they'll always say, no, you know, but for profit, if you mind that those financial statements, cash flow statements, tax, your tax strategy and your balance sheet and your monthly, weekly P&L, your subscribers, I do a lot of SaaS, so there's a lot of subscribers, your churn, all of those things, as you're looking through all of that, that is your scorecard. You don't sell something because you're just giving yourself a pat on the back. You sell something because it lands on the mothership of dashboards, which is your financial statements. And your financial statements, a lot of people say, well, I just need 1 year out. I'm like, no, you mind the 1 year. I actually build out five-year modeling on purpose because I want to see the blind spots. No, we can't hire until we hit this tier. And that tier has to be the bottom line that has to have that much cash flow. Because if you don't have that much revenue to meet your cash flow, then you're either getting investment, which is fine. I mean, you can get investment or debt financing, but then you have to have a business plan in order to pay that off or make sure that you're managing to the investors. Micro businesses, you are your investor a lot of times, right? Your scorecard, I don't care if you're hiring a salesperson, you're hiring marketing, you're hiring fractional tax planning, whatever you're doing, you won't even know if you can hire those people unless you're minding your financial statements. Over and over. And if you say, well, I don't like math, great. There's so many great models out there that you could just throw it there and you can learn.
Definitely, we can learn there. And so looking for those blind spots, we don't like them when we're driving. And definitely don't want them in our business there as well. So we've touched a little bit on cyber risk through the digital badging, how ones are committing fraud through there. But yet I know as a tax professional myself, I deal with a lot of sensitive data. and you deal with some, I'm sure, in some sense, we have the level of cyber risk. And so, and even every business, in fact, has a level of cyber risk. I mean, it took me a while to realize it. I thought I was doing, a few years ago, I thought I was doing great when I had my security suite. I had my fire, I had all this stuff. And then and I thought, I was like, oh, I'm doing great with all this stuff. And then I talked to a professional that's in the field, a level I met at an NATP conference there that specializes in this for what I do for tax professionals and so on. And it scared the living daylights out of me. And I realized I was so underprotected. And so last few years, I spend a few $100 a month now just to make sure that I have my systems monitored by a third party, a service that is doing a fantastic job. They do other things beside the service, but they monitor my system. And they've built in firewalls, all that kind of stuff to give me the level. Plus, of course, I have insurance. So when it comes to protecting financial data, that's what I do as far as tax, which is if you're looking at someone who to help you in dealing, that's something you got to actually ask if you're using a tax professional or a accounting professional, whatever you're doing, you got to ask them about their security. What are you doing to protect my data? Which surprisingly, I never get that. But anyway, in fact, I don't think I've ever had anybody really ask that, but that's something that people should ask because the vulnerabilities we get, one of the number one areas that people of professionals at are getting hacked, guess what it is? Guess what they're going after? Tax pros. It's actually out there. And so, but it's not just tax pros, it's businesses in general, micro businesses there. So what are you suggesting? I've talked about what I have done, but how about your suggestions for small businesses to protect financial data that they have that, once again, they may be overlooking just because, well, I'm not like that tax person over there. I'm not doing all that. But obviously, do they have some vulnerability still?
Yeah, actually, a lot of people think that it is the Deltas and the CrowdStrikes and the Microsofts that get hacked. And unfortunately, we need to define risk. And I'm going to use that in storytelling for what you do, Marcelino. You are helping businesses hedge against risk of losing their business with tax, right? And there's tools that you use to do that, but there's also advice and there's frameworks that you use to do that, right? The frameworks can start with financial modeling, but really the controls are the IRS policies, right? I mean, they're the controls and they are what say you can get the earned income credit or you can have a payroll reduction here or there. Those are the roadmaps that we are required to adhere to, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you are helping somebody, you helping them with their tax risk, it's no different with cyber risk. There's always a blueprint first, and then security is second. So your managed service provider is doing your IT stuff. He's got firewalls, change your passwords, but who's saying why you need to change the password? That's risk. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference between the security side of the fence and the risk modeling side. It is making sure that you lower your cyber insurance because you have policies and procedures. So NIST-CSF might be one of them. That's the very base root of all of that. But when Facebook got fined $300 million, it was chump change. They don't care. So who go after it? Great. How many years is that going to be held up in court and everything else? Who even knows? So one of the best examples I have of explaining risk is back in the day when you and I first met, the old way of hacking was the thieves would go in, the threat actors would go in and break an H&R Block window and steal their hard drive. Why? Because tax returns have all the sensitive information, even more than healthcare, other than healthcare doing other things, which they screw up all the time on cyber risk as well. But one of the big challenges that they have is they underestimate that the birthdays are in the e-file record. We all know this. That's how the IRS actually matched up everything. And I'm not saying anything that threat actors don't already know. So they would go break a window and steal the hard drives. So then tax preparers would go in, take the hard drives, get external hard drives and put them in a safe. You know, I mean, it was like, okay, I've got to protect the data because clients are going to want to come to me when they get their little letter that I expose sensitive data to that. And you fast forward a few years, and I was in the middle of healthcare and it was the same thing. And Aetna got a $5 million fine. It was like a slap on the wrist because they exposed in a window, in an envelope, not cyber, HIV results, right? Mm-hmm. And that was just the beginning of the fines because the rest would start suing them civilly, right? and that was part of it. Mm-hmm. So now we've taken what... I laugh. George Yuzzi, I'm a CRO for a fractional CRO for Omnistrict. I'll give him a little plug. He always says there's an air war and a ground war. Security is the ground war. The air war is hedging against your risk or data privacy. And it is based on individual states. Now, in the United States, that's 50 individual states. California has its own set of laws, but Europe has GDPR, even down to websites having no terms, no policies, no anything, no privacy policies. And Google deranks you for it. And when you're trying to do these programs, CMMC is for the Department of Defense, right? We would hate for other countries to get that information, right? And I just said it costs an organization... Actually, it costs about $1 million to get there. I was saying $100,000 a year, $300,000 just to get that certification. But you have physical things that you are required for that to make sure HR records are safe, to make sure that any certain unclassified information is safe. And so in tax, you have all of that information on companies. You have all that information on individuals, and that is the mothership in the United States. And of course, we do know that the IRS got hacked, you know, like 2013 or something like that after that. And everybody was running around and I'm like, I just locked down my credit and never opened it again because I keep getting letters from every healthcare organization and everybody out there. But to a small business, they will close their doors. Because their people will leave. Big business, they'll get by. Small business, no way.
Yeah, very careful. Something, one of those areas that, once again, avoiding the, I wish I knew. Guess what? I wish I knew. That's why we're telling you now, so that you do know, so you can get a fix there. But we all have a good idea for a business, and some people do a great job, a good idea in business, but yet the execution, and that comes back to cash flow. Payroll taxes. So as you work with individuals or businesses or the founders of a business, how do you help them build the discipline to make sure they have their execution and not doing what some people do a job of borrowing from the IRS?
Yeah. Well, part of that is forcing them to calendar making the deposits. Like you said at the very beginning, you can make your deposits, but there is strategy all around that. So as long as they get it on the calendar and they keep that going, you can actually build it into your cash flow statements. And then, yeah, some of that has to be disciplined, that if you're somebody who double dips in your own bank accounts and don't have that, not AA for it, but you've got to borrow from yourself the whole time. At some point, you're just going to need to hire somebody else to manage the deposits. If you are going to hire that third party, you will want to make sure that it's like Marcelino so that he actually has cyber insurance and everything and keeps your data private. But just doing frequent deposits, you know, different states even have. You can do it monthly. You can do it at the same time with e-filing for EFTS and all of those different places. You can just set it and forget it. But the main thing is that you have cash flow statements that you are forecasting. Mm-hmm. What happened in the past is in the past. You need to forecast cash flow. And I know forecasting is something that people get very fearful of because it's like, I can't forecast. it's funny the difference between like a sales organization and again, a physical, the product side of the fence where they're delivering it. As they're delivering operationally, you can't get them to forecast if it would save their lives, but the salespeople have to forecast their quota, you know, because they've got their quota coming up. So if you think of yourself as forecasting every time revenue changes, those dips, and having, once again, Marcelino, those weekly check-in on how cash flow toward the end of the month, making sure you automate those deposits is part of your automation and everything else that you should be fine unless cash flow stops. And that part, that's a whole nother discussion.
That definitely is a discussion, and you hit on some key points there, which is a big area that in a seminar I just did over this week, one of the key points they said, automation, deposits. And that's something I myself have done a big case of, is just automation of deposits, taking advantage of the tools that are there to make sure that that certain things, and there's no reason why all businesses can't just take advantage of that automation to be able to do that there. But we want to keep that execution good. So once again, we keep the IRS from calling there. And we keep coming back to the books, clean books, how that's important. Now those need to be valid, need a part of your business model. Now, you talk about forecasting. I figured out why people don't like to forecast, by the way, because the word forecast is associated with the weather.
Does feel that way at times.
And so people know how the weatherman, how correct the weatherman is all the time. So maybe that's the thought. But that's what came to my mind when you started, when we started talking about forecasting. So maybe that's kind of their hesitation. They related too much to weather and how weather isn't all, weather forecasts aren't always accurate. So, but anyway.
But at first, but you get better and better and better at it because you have historical data to inform the forecast. It's harder when you have no historical data. But I was coaching a salesman a few years back, and he said he was sales engineer, so he wasn't part of it. He had his own KPIs, but it was supporting the salespeople, right? So he was like, I can't forecast what I'm going to do this quarter. And I said, I bet you can. And then we can say that you will hit it at 20%, 30%, 40%, 80%. And he said, well, how can I do that? And I said, well, every morning when you wake up, you brush your teeth. Can you count how many times you missed brushing your teeth in the past? Oh, yeah, I could do that. Okay, well, I want you to get up this month, every time, count how many times you did this action and how many times you didn't. There's your accuracy. It informs it. It also helps remember to brush your teeth better. And so we set up key markers for him to be able to say, okay, this is my actions I have to do every single day in order to help create the revenue that these sales team members are doing. I have to meet with engineering on this side of the fence 10 times a day. So I will meet with engineering 10 times a day. I will not let anything. And we talk about SMART goals in forecasting. You can do the exact same thing with your financial modeling. Those SMART goals, sometimes it feels intangible, but it's not. You can count behavior. I call them the qualification against the quantification metric.
Okay. Now, I always like this term because I've encountered it. I know you've encountered it. We've done some creative accounting. So when you're trying to prove a business is viable, how does this creative accounting then hurt this validation process that you're trying to do?
Well, everybody listening to this at some point has either wanted to buy a home or has bought a home. And we have all been in Budgeting Anonymous, which is we pay three times the price of our mortgage in interest, right? I mean, that's what you really paid for your home. So if you bought your home for $300,000, if you let it run the course, you paid $900,000. But just three times. Okay. So as you kind of think of that creatively, small businesses form either S-corps, C-corps, sole proprietorships, all of those things. And there is some creativity behind it, but you're starting a small business and you're going to need to know that when you start a small business, that if you don't have a W-2 for 2 years, that shows that you can manage that mortgage, then a lot of times you're not going to be able to get a mortgage for 2 years. You just know that as a startup. I've lived it, been there. I'm like, okay, you know, let's make sure we have a house by the time we're doing another startup or whatever we're doing, you know, or you're renting. It doesn't matter. So there's two sides of the fence. When you're first starting up, you are going to have heavy marketing expense. That's one of the biggest reasons that businesses fail is they refuse to pay for marketing to get the word out. And they don't have any sort of referrals from everybody, right, at this point because they're new. And because they don't have that, they end up having to pay a lot more in marketing. You're going to pay probably 30% in marketing. And people will be going, I'm not going to spend that much on marketing. And it's like, well, then you probably aren't going to make it. And the challenge is, as if you are, let's say it's an S corp or sole proprietor, and you take that whole marketing spend, your net profit is really not good that first year. Creatively, you don't pay as much taxes. Not creatively, you will not get a mortgage. It's the easiest way for me to explain. So if you take investors and you say, well, I took every single expense, and this is where we talk tax strategy. If you take every single expense, which you should be, then your net profit your first year is going to be in the toilet because probably are a little upside down the first year. If you're going to be real, you know, it's like, oh no, I'm going to be this unicorn and I'm just going to take off. But realistically, if you think about your first year in business, it wasn't probably as stellar as you wanted it to be. And in your strategy for taxes, if you take all those expenses, just know you're not going to get a mortgage. If you are being creative that way and investors are looking at your company, again, your net profit looks like crap and you're probably upside down in taxes if you are being creative in taxes. Because some things, we talked about controls, right? You can play within the law, but you can get very close to the fringe where it's questionable on that. And again, that's a, you better document till the cows come home because that's a strategy that you can get upside down. And if your goal is, again, when I work with businesses, I say, what's your goal? To exit in 5 years? Then there's a different strategy that you do in order to basically pay for clients, right? To have a list big enough to get that. And there's lots of different ways that you look at it. But then in 5 years from now, when they look at how you dealt with your taxes, they don't want to buy you. So it's all, and I'm not saying take every expense. I'm not saying do everything that we're talking about. I'm going to tell you it depends. But if you're not forecasting how that works out, you're going to be in trouble. So. And let's say if you're using the IRS to fund your business, and I'm not going to say anything about that. If you're using that, then eventually, somehow or another, it will catch up with you.
So yeah, forecasting is important. And it's with the forecasting and not getting so much in the creative accounting side, but as we forecast, would you say that's also, at least this is the interpretation I'm getting, but is it in a sense you're forecasting, but in a sense, is it also kind of like goal setting?
It is. That's why I said, I can tell you that there's qualification and quantification and you can goal set to it. People will say, oh, you can't tell what that's going to be 5 years from now. But it, again, back to Alice in Wonderland, if you don't know where you want to go, you won't even get to that point, right? So there is markers and steps that you have to take, and it all ties up to also making sure that not only are you starting with the forecast, but you're also looking back at what happened at the same time so that you see your trend. So setting a brand new business up, it's all forecast, right?
Yeah.
But eventually you have history. So you have to look at history against forecast, which would tell you goal setting. Yes, I could do this. If you take a baby and say, crawl today, they don't crawl because they don't know how to crawl. If you put an something in front of them and let them start to get excited to scoot, they eventually see that they move, but they were looking forward before they were actually looking back. And they have to constantly true that up and forecasting with the true up of actual. Now let's call it actual. What actually happened, if it actually happens the way that you forecasted at 80%, then you can know at 80% accuracy that that will happen again.
Okay.
Right.
Excellent there. Oh, yeah. 80% of what you forecast, which basically then means you can raise your forecast a little bit, and maybe the next year you might hit what you actually had set the first year.
Could be. And it could be that you hit it at such a great goal that you say we needed to grow by 15%, 20%, 30%, or capacity is now there. We've learned our hard knocks. We believe in a forecast we'll be able to, now that all the hard knocks are under our belt, we believe we'll be able to do this growth rate this year. And in fact, in the financial modeling, we kind of look at that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, and with that forecasting and modeling, you get there. And by doing so, you help to avoid the mental toll that financial chaos can bring upon you, because tax debt or other debt causes stress, strong psychological stress. So when it comes to financial disorganization and the founder or the micro business owner's ability to lead, and they're in this distress, what's the first step? Once again, that comes back to it's all chaos. How do we help them get back that control that's currently in chaos?
Well, one of the things Jack Stack used to say, he wrote The Great Game of Business. He used to say, if you plan for a recession, you never have one. And it wasn't to say that a recession doesn't happen, but that you're ready to pivot at any second. So first of all, I like to de-stress by going again back to financial modeling and saying, okay, I told you I owned a construction company. It was slated, we had a project, it was slated for $75 million in net profit and cleared our schedule. It was going to take a long time. We built it to that point. And you can't predict a trade tower going down, right? You cannot predict that the funding that was funding the project would have been involved in that any more than you can predict that your business will be okay. It's okay to say it's okay. You could seek people advice, like from you, Marcelino, for the tax strategy at that point. But a lot of times, I had a CFO once, and he said, the numbers don't lie, but they help you see clarity. And so here's how this worked. We had sales team fighting with operations, and this was manufacturing. The sales team would come and say, oh, they just don't want to work for us. They're so angry with us all the time. They think we're prima donnas. So we did a little thing. We said, okay, you're angst, you're upset, you're struggling. So in a company survey, we counted how many times without solicitation operations said that sales was great. And then what we did is held a huddle with sales and said, you guys have a 92% approval rating. And here's how. We counted every single time. So a lot of times when you're in financial distress or distress, going back to the statement of doesn't give you the answer all the time, but it gives you a clue to the answer for financial statements. For me, we take a breath and we forecast and we remodel it, and to a point that people start to calm down. That's when they need a resource like you, Marcelino. That's when they all of a sudden say, well, okay, if we get this under control, or if we do this tax credit, or if we restructure this team, and that's monitoring the cash flow statements with it, right? When everything, I remember in COVID, people were like, oh my gosh, we're going to be in so much trouble. And I was in a Vistage meeting and this guy was just going crazy about how bad it was going to be. And they grew like 300% the next month. And he goes, oh, who knew people would feed birds with our bird feed in COVID? You know, and I was like, you just don't know actually look at the information and be ready to pivot, be okay with pivoting what you're doing. And sometimes you're able to pull it out and then you feel much better because you have a plan of attack. Mm-hmm. It's the goal setting again. Usually when people have a lot of anxiety, mm-hmm. it's because they just don't know the steps to get out of the anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so as we set those goals, that's the forecasting, as we mentioned out, which, okay, we come into our business, we're going into the beginning of a new year here shortly, which basically, okay, this is where I am now, 2025, where would I'd like to be 12 months from now? What's basically my goal for the year? And then that actually then, okay, I got this goal set, got my forecast set. So now I know I could do X amount of advertising, X amount of help me to set aside all those particular areas of what I need to do to reach this goal at the end of the year, which then once you have all that in place, then your mind actually says, okay, let me get this step. It's doable. Let's do this step, this step, this step. Helps you to figure out, okay, this is where I want to get to, because now you got it down. And certainly that gets rid of the mental toll of a financial chaos. And actually you can prevent the financial chaos and prevent the tax problem as well. Then if anything, you want to create a tax problem where you're needing help to figure out ways not to pay so much tax because you're making so much money, you got to figure out what to do with it all and not pay so much tax. That's actually, if you're going to have a tax problem, that's a tax problem we want to help you with, is to figure out how to legally only pay the tax you owe, but yet set aside as much in various tax deferred, tax-free accounts, those kind of things. Granted, yes, we also solve the other tax issues as well, but that's just prevented from getting there even more so.
Yeah, that's in the plan. And that's exactly, and it gives so much relief because you don't know if you need to pivot mm-hmm. unless you're monitoring that, unless you're doing that kind of thing. It's, to me, I call it high involvement planning. Mm-hmm. It's candy for me to go into organizations, whether they're tiny. I love the micro businesses because they need the help so much. Mm-hmm. But whether they're big or small or in between, I love seeing the relief that when they all land on a plan, because mm-hmm. it's if you know where you're going, there's so much relief. It's mm-hmm. there's no chaos. You know, yeah. And not saying that there's not going to be chaos, but it's just mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, here's yeah. the relief.
Yeah. So Valerie, you know, I just really appreciate all the insights you've provided today and helping through this I wish I knew syndrome. Basically, that's been the theme of the whole program today, because there is so much that people know what their particular area of expertise is, and that's whatever they do, if they're a carpenter, they're a plumber, or whatever their trade is, or whatever they do, they're good at that. But then it's these other business side issues that oftentimes they either need assistance with, or they just need to learn more to be able to manage. So whatever the case may be, everybody needs to basically know what they didn't know, take it the other way so that they can definitely get there. So I just want to invite you, Valerie, to those listening here, if they feel like, you know, Valerie's got some very good ideas, how can I get a hold of Valerie here to connect and see if we'd be a good fit to work together on something?
Yeah, and I would love to work with people. That's my favorite thing. At the end of the day, I'm easy to find. You can email me at VC, first and last initial, and at valeriecobb.com. So easy. You can also, I'm on almost any social media channel under the Impact VC. And also, I'm also on, gosh, on LinkedIn. It's just easier to just find me. I'm the only one that has Valerie Cobb as the... Mm-hmm. That's easy.
Well, of course, the other side is they can just contact me and I can get you connected as well. So...
It's great. Contact Marcelino. And obviously, I have to do a plug. Contact Marcelino, because strategy is something that a lot of times people think they're getting. And instead, they're getting the actuals versus the forecast, mm-hmm. the strategy. And strategy is huge. And it's amazing mm-hmm. that people, tax preparers, deal with what happened. Mm-hmm. Remember that they don't deal with the planning and the mm-hmm. and the execution of it. So I do, they're needed, trust me. And a lot of tax preparers do strategy as well. So I'm not, mm-hmm. but Marcelino definitely does strategy. So check him out.
Okay. Sounds great. And again, I want to thank you for all these beautiful insights today. It's been a very, very informative conversation as Valerie and I have talked so much about what touches every business owner who has ever felt that sinking feeling in their gut, that moment where you realize you didn't know what you didn't know, whether it's a broken business model, a cyber threat lurking in the shadows, or tax compliance issues quietly building into a crisis, the I wish I knew syndrome can destroy everything you've worked for. But here's the truth. You don't have to stay in the dark. Knowledge is power and action is survival. The businesses that thrive are the ones that face their blind spots head on and get the right help before it's too late. If you are sitting there right now with that knot in your stomach, by the way, because of either unfiled tax returns, IRS notices piling up, payroll tax debt, wage garnishments, or the terrifying threat of bank levies, I need you to listen closely. Remember, you're not alone in this fight, and you do not deserve to carry this burden by yourself. I've dedicated my career to standing between hardworking people like you and the IRS. I can help you find relief starting today, and don't let fear paralyze you into inaction. Visit taxreliefcall.com right now and schedule your appointment. Let's end your tax nightmare together and get you the peace of mind you deserve.